KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
Mid-40s.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Catherine Olson is the outgoing director of the Seattle Police Office of Professional Accountability. She's been the civilian in charge of monitoring police complaints since 2007. As the head of the Seattle Police Office of Professional Accountability, Catherine Olson is responsible for investigating complaints about police misconduct. There are between 75 and 100 each year, everything from a complaint about an officer being rude to the use of excessive force. And we'll be talking about that latter category in a moment. But do you actually get complaints about officers being rude? And what do you do in a case like that?
First of all, good afternoon, Russ.
Good afternoon. And, thanks for being here.
Yes, absolutely. Just to correct the record, there's the OPA, the Office of Professional Accountability, actually receives closer to about 500 complaints a year.
Okay.
And the majority of those complaints, however, do involve things like rudeness and low-level misconduct. The more serious misconduct is more rare.
Is that actionable from the view of your office if an officer is rude?
Our goal is to push those cases back out to a supervisor for dealing with it more as a performance-related issue. And that, in fact, is what happens. About almost two-thirds of the complaints that come in are alleging, as we said, pretty low-level misconduct that wouldn't result in discipline anyway. And those are cases that we send back out to the supervisor to handle.
Nearly a year ago, a Department of Justice investigation found a pattern of unconstitutional use of excessive force by Seattle police. The DOJ found 57% of the time Seattle police used their batons in an excessive manner. 70% of the force encounters involved mentally ill people or people who are high on drugs or alcohol. Catherine Olson, do you think the DOJ report on the Seattle police was fair and honest?
The DOJ report that made a finding that one out of five uses of force by the Seattle Police Department was unconstitutional has not been substantiated in the sense of the DOJ hasn't provided the background evidence that supports that finding. But on the other hand, they also have been working with the department since they first came to Seattle well over a year ago to try to identify those kinds of things that police officers do that are questionable from DOJ's perspective and look at policy changes that can be made and training that can be enhanced in order to improve the service of police officers to the community.
So the kind of complaints that you got about excessive force, maybe it was not as many as the Department of Justice looked at, so you can neither verify nor contradict their finding?
Well, this is one of the issues that's a little perplexing for me, Ross. The OPA sees probably about 10% of the uses of force by the police department that actually get reported by way of a complaint to OPA. I should back up and say it's very rare for police officers to use force. It's very rare. When force is used, it's, as I said, about 10% of the time there will be a complaint made to OPA. Based on those complaints that the DOJ found to be quality investigations conducted, well documented, thoughtful, had a lot of very good feedback to the OPA about its investigations. Rarely does the OPA find that an officer misused force or failed to report force.
You know, one of the things that jumped out at me from that report last year was the finding that in 2010, it was 44 officers who accounted for 30% of all the use of force incidents. You didn't look at them all, but in your 5 years, did you see the same names popping up in use of force incidents?
Not necessarily. And again, OPA only saw a subset. I understand that was one of the report's findings. That's also not unusual, comparing Seattle to other police departments that, depending on your assignment, where you're assigned, hours you're working, the chances of you being involved with an arrest, which is the time you're most likely to use force, is just going to increase. So it's more likely, for example, that arrests are going to happen at 2 o'clock in the morning when bars are closing than at 3 o'clock on a sunny afternoon like today.
So some officers would naturally have a lot more of these issues they were dealing with.
They'd certainly be dealing with a challenging part of the community who are, as you noted, over 70% of the time impaired, either with alcohol or drugs or both. or impaired otherwise. And so they're very challenging situations for the officers to begin with. Unusual in the senses that the great majority of contacts that the Seattle police officers have with the community don't involve arrests, don't involve uses of force.
You did not notice a pattern, though, even in that limited number of excessive force complaints that you received. You didn't see similar names coming up again and again.
We might see similar names, but nothing along the lines of what the DOJ was pointing to. But again, our sample is much smaller,
right,
in the sense of our OPA only looking at about 10% of the cases.
Well, what about your responsibilities in the Office of Professional Accountability? You dealt with individual cases. Were you also tasked with taking a look and seeing if there were patterns and then dealing with the pattern?
We do that, yes, Russ. We look. One of the things that we look at on an annual basis is whether there's a pattern on use of force in terms of particular officers getting a certain number of complaints about use of force over time, and that's something that that OPA does track and report out on from a statistical standpoint. The tracking on individual officers really comes through the early intervention system, which is handled through a different part of the department.
So what was your reaction when you read the report, particularly these issues of excessive force and the relatively small number of officers involved? Were you reading that and saying, I'm surprised? Were you reading that and saying, I'm not so surprised? I mean, you have probably more of a database to look at these numbers and these figures than anyone else does.
I was surprised by the extent of the finding. And again, based on my experience working at the Seattle Police Department, based on my experience in seeing a subset of the use of force that comes through by way of complaints, I was surprised that the Department of Justice made the finding it did, which was basically that 20% of the uses of force were found to be unconstitutional. I have not seen the data behind that, so it might be there. I'm surprised by the bottom line number and haven't seen it substantiated yet.
Will anyone ever? I mean, will those Department of Justice records that led to this critical report ever be made public?
I don't know. I assume so, but I don't know.
Catherine Olson is my guest. She's the outgoing director of the Seattle Police Office of Professional Accountability, and she's the civilian who's been in charge of kind of monitoring police complaints, and she's been doing that for the past 5 years. The DOJ report said that Seattle Police had an ineffective system of complaint investigation and adjudication, and I wondered if you agreed with that.
I did not agree with that, and ultimately in the settlement agreement that was reached between the department and DOJ, the Department of Justice acknowledged that the complaint investigation system, in fact, is a quality system that's very sound, very thoughtful, well-documented, and acknowledged up front that the OPA system is actually an overall good, strong system.
When you did get complaints about excessive force, and maybe you still do, do you feel as though you have the authority to make the changes that are necessary to rectify the situation?
The way the system works is if the OPA receives a complaint with regards to excessive use of force, the OPA is going to investigate that. And if there's a finding that an officer engaged in excessive use of force, the OPA makes a recommendation to the chief, who has ultimate finding on matters of discipline. So if the OPA recommends that finding that an officer has engaged in misconduct, the chief ultimately decides if he agrees and what sort of discipline should be imposed. So, for example, in the case of the very tragic shooting of the late John T. Williams, Ian Burke worked for the Seattle Police Department at the time that he shot John T. Williams. And ultimately, that matter was investigated by OPA with a recommended finding that the shooting was outside of policy and outside of training, and the chief would have terminated him other than the fact he resigned shortly beforehand.
What is there a change you think right now that maybe has not been put in place yet or is being put in place that you'll think will make a big difference in the way complaints are handled?
A significant project that I'm working on it actually grows out of the 2020 initiative that the mayor and Chief Diaz launched about 6 months ago. And that involves decentralizing some of that low-level misconduct investigations. So right now—
What would qualify as a low-level misconduct investigation?
Well, we started out talking about the rudeness, for example. So I don't want to condone rudeness. Obviously, citizens should be treated with respect and with dignity. But if they feel they've been treated in a rude manner by a police officer, I would really like the officer's supervisor to get involved in working with the civilian and with the officer to address whatever that concern is.
And that doesn't happen now?
It happens now, but the system as it's set up now, that kind of complaint comes into OPA and then we send it back out. And what I'm working on right now through the 2020 initiatives is setting up precinct liaisons so that we've got folks in each of the precincts who can handle these low-level issues, working with the supervisors and officers that have special background in separating out the low-level versus the really serious concerns that need to come to OPA.
So it's happening.
It is in process now. We're setting up that system. And I think it's a way to provide much quicker response to citizens because typically it could take up to 60 days from a complaint coming in about low-level rudeness and getting addressed and closed out. Whereas if it didn't have to go through all the paperwork of OPA at the outset, we can cut that time down drastically. At the same time, OPA can monitor the process to make sure it's working effectively.
I understand in your resignation letter, you said that you'd like to remain the head of the Seattle Police Department's Office of Professional Accountability until next May. Do you still want to, and are you going to stay in office until then?
I don't recall making a specific date about next May, but I did say in my letter that I am committed, if possible, to work through the transition process as the city identifies my replacement and that person actually comes on board. That's something I didn't have the benefit of when I first started, and I think it's really important if I can do that.
You ready to go?
This is a great department, and I have been very honored and privileged to have served as director of the Office of Professional Accountability. So, you know, as I leave, it's with ambivalence because it's a very challenging time as we're going through the transition of bringing on a monitor and setting up the police commission. And there's a lot of experience that I want to be able to share in that process. But at the same time, I've met many of my professional goals when I first came here and am ready for a new task and a new challenge.
Catherine Olson is my guest. She's head of the Seattle Police Office of Professional Accountability, outgoing head of that office. Only a tiny percentage of misconduct complaints, as I understand it, have been sustained by your office. And some people say, well, that's proof that you're not being tough enough on the police. How do you respond to those kind of criticisms?
That's a great question because it's one that I've been struggling with both here and in Seattle through the OPA and also as a past president of the National Association for Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement, where I've worked with people doing the same kind of work I'm doing throughout the country, actually around the world. So we come back to the question of how do you measure success? What is a successful oversight program? The DOJ, every auditor who's looked at the investigations of the OPA have said they are quality investigations. They're by and large very thorough, well documented. So the investigations themselves are done well. The sustain rate tends to be around 11, 12, 13% of complaints filed with OPA are sustained. That has been a pretty consistent number for 10 years. Comparing that sustain rate to if you want to use sustain rate as a measure of success, if you compare it to other cities, it is many times over the sustain rate you see in other cities. It's a little bit of apples and oranges because everybody doesn't do the work the same way Seattle does. Seattle has a unique system created by Seattle for Seattle, this hybrid system of a civilian inside the department. But if you look at other cities, San Jose has a monitoring program. Their sustain rate is 6%. Washington, D.C. and Chicago both have all civilian investigation agencies. Their sustain rate is 2% or less. you know, I can go around the country looking at those numbers. So if we look at sustain rate, actually Seattle is much higher than others.
But you prefaced your remark by saying, if you consider the sustain rate a measure of success,
and that's,
should that be the measure of success, that the the area of the department that handles complaints about police malfeasance has a high, sustains a high number of those complaints? Is that your measure? Do you think that's the right measure?
I don't know. And that's, I think that is the, I think that is the question that is going to be before the police commission as it considers the overall accountability system. And as I said, is something that I'm looking forward to exploring more. If the investigations themselves are deemed to be of high quality, as OPAs have been found to be, then that means that the 12% rate is a reliable number, as are the other findings. So from the standpoint of just reliable findings that come about following thorough investigations, then yes, I think that's an important number. On the other hand, I think that we still have distrust in the community. And so if the community distrusts the investigation quality, distrusts the findings, despite the fact that DOJ and all auditors have said they're good investigations, then we have to look behind that and say, well, what is it that the community needs in order to feel some sense of trust in the process?
We're kind of in this consent agreement between the city and the Department of Justice to settle these accusations of excessive use of force. And there's a lot more cooks in the kitchen now. Connie Rice, co-director of a civil rights organization, has been brought to advise the city of Seattle. The judge overseeing the consent decree and the city of Seattle have agreed to bring in Merrick Bobb to monitor Seattle police progress in fulfilling the consent decree. By the way, Merrick Bobb is going to be our guest tomorrow at 9 a.m. on weekday. He's overseeing law enforcement agencies all over the country, including the Los Angeles Police Department. Is the SPD Office of Professional Accountability going to end up the same today in the future as it is today? Do you think that part of this consent decree is going to result in a different sort of civilian overview of police?
That's certainly one of the outcomes that are possible, because the police commission that will be looking at a number of different issues that are not addressed in the consent decree settlement agreement with Department of Justice, the police commission will be specifically looking at the oversight structure and I hope looking at issues that we were just talking about in terms of how you measure success. If the investigation process, for example, is a good, reliable system, but it doesn't engender trust in the community, then how do we go about ensuring that the community is trusting in the system?
We're just about out of time, Catherine. Any quick words of advice you'll have for your the next civilian director of the OPA?
I think that the job requires somebody who is willing to look at all sides of the story. Some people say that the job of the OPA director is to be an advocate for the community. Definitely the OPA director as a civilian is entrusted to bring in the civilian perspective, and I take that very, very seriously. On the other hand, what my job requires is that I ensure that the investigation process itself is thorough.
Catherine Olson, thank you so much for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Ross.
And don't forget, if you're interested in this issue, Merrick Bobb, who's been hired to monitor the Seattle Police progress on fulfilling this consent agreement over this issue, is going to be our guest tomorrow on weekday, and that'll be at 9 a.m. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.